G'day, gang. This is a bonus test episode. We recorded it not knowing if you would hear it or not. As a result, my audio isn't the best, but I think it's still a pretty good episode, so I hope you enjoy it. This was done while we were trying to decide if we should switch podcaster systems. So we were trialing a lot of new tech with this episode, but I think it turned out pretty good, and it's why we made a change. So, yeah, enjoy. On this bonus episode, we discuss The Eyes of Tammy Faye, Jackass Forever, Don't Breathe 2, Night Teeth, Wrath of Man, Old, and Home Sweet Home Alone. All this and more on upcoming attractions. Gang, and welcome back to Upcoming Attractions. What is this episode? This is a test. We're testing out some new tech. Where today we're trying a new way of doing episodes. So maybe you'll see this, maybe you won't. And literally 5 minutes ago, we're like, "Well, what is there to talk about?" And I was like, "I've got a list of films we keep saying we're going to cover but haven't covered, or they're too old to do now or whatever." So we're going to smash this gauntlet style and just one after another see what we can do. We may not get through all of them, but shall we begin, my friends?
We shall.
Yes. All right. Let's do it.
So also, I should preface, a lot of these films, some of them we've seen pretty recently. Some of them we haven't seen in maybe 6 months. So this might be a challenge for people to remember. So we'll see how we go. Let's kick things off with Adrienne. You saw Eyes of Tammy Faye. We were meant to record this a couple of months ago, but never got around.
Yes.
Tell us your thoughts on Eyes of Tammy Faye.
So The Eyes of Tammy Faye was a film that a friend of ours collectively brought over to watch, and I never really had the intent to, but I'm so glad that I did because it was amazing. The story, it's based on a true story about a couple from the 1970s who are sort of like Hillsong-esque idols in the Christian community in the States, and they became legendary and sort of became, I think they catapulted like Christian TV into the mainstream. It was nuts. They became like, they were worth hundreds of millions of dollars, like by today's standards, I'm pretty sure. And Tammy Faye Baker was actually quite an amazing person, despite a lot of corruption that ended up surrounding them, mostly because of her husband, Jim. But she actually wanted to give a voice to people suffering in the LGBTQI+ community, which is very controversial, obviously, being so religious. But she was amazing. She's played by Jessica Chastain, who I believe could easily be handed the Best Actress Oscar for her portrayal. She was explosive in this film. She was just an acting powerhouse. You see her go from, I think, about her end of her teens up until her death in the film. So she plays her throughout her whole life pretty much. And it's just an acting Olympics for her. And Andrew Garfield is really amazing in it as well. He is, they really bring all of the corrupted parts of themselves out in their performances, but also make you see who they are just on a human level. And it's a story that I never thought I would really enjoy or go out of my way to see, but I am so happy I did. And I actually think if you appreciate acting at all, then you will enjoy this film.
Damn, that's high praise. Pull it up here. The Eyes of Tammy Faye, currently nominated for Best Actress and Best Makeup and Hairstyling at the 94th Academy Awards. Wow, that sounds Sounds heavy. Religion's always a heavy subject. So.
You know what? It is heavy, but it's not heavy in a way that you're going to leave it feeling like you just ran a marathon. You sort of go through it feeling like you lived their lives with them. I don't know. The director as well, Michael Showalter, he did The Big Sick, which is really, really awesome. And I feel like he carries a very similar tone in this film as well, if you enjoyed The Big Sick.
Big Sick, incredible film. Love The Big Sick.
What was that one again? I can't even remember The Big Sick.
That was Kumail Nanjiani from now Eternals fame. That was kind of his big breakout role. I think he wrote
I know the one. Yeah.
But he's been around for ages in the comedy circuit. It's based on a true story that happened with him and his wife, who is also in the industry, where they just started dating and almost straight away she gets a terminal illness and he stays with her. And he sort of just like meets the family and just a really weird way of like, unusual way of getting to know someone while they're pretty much in a coma or bedridden or whatever for the majority of that period. It's a really powerful film. So, yeah, that's The Eyes of Tammy Faye. Looking forward to seeing it sometime.
Yeah.
Good luck at the Oscars. speaking of Oscar-nominated films, this film, you know, not nominated for the Oscars, but maybe it should be. Jackass Forever.
I was wondering where you were going with that.
Yeah. Look, I've been meaning to see this so bad. I've got a group of friends I've been telling them I'll see it with them. But it just hasn't happened. And that's why we haven't done it on the podcast yet. We keep putting it off. But Jesse, you've seen it.
Yes.
Tell me, what is there to say about Jackass that hasn't already been said, I guess?
I mean, yeah, I don't really have heaps to say about it. It's going to be
how the character arts, the plot driven,
the story is really good. Yeah. The story is really good. I loved some of the character arcs. There was a twist at the end. It's Jackass. Of course, it's going to be entertaining and fun. They bring it all once again. And this time there's a whole bunch of new people, in the cast. So there's like a group of younger people and then there's like, Johnny Knoxville, Steve-O, just the original guys. It was really good. I wouldn't say the stunts were probably as extreme as the past three movies. Like there's some that are still really extreme, but I wouldn't say they're as extreme, I guess, which is fine. They still do really crazy shit. I mean, Steve-O and Johnny Knoxville got hurt the worst on this film compared to any of the other movies.
Are there any that stand out that you remember that you just went, like your jaw dropped?
The skits or?
The stunts.
Johnny Knoxville did a bull stunt in this and apparently I read they weren't actually going to do, like, because he's done a bull stunt in every single Jackass movie.
When you say bull stunt, do you mean like testicle balls or like?
B-U-L-L.
Oh, bull.
Yeah. So you know how every you know how every episode, Johnny Knoxville does a bull stunt. They weren't actually going to do one for this movie, and then they like decided last minute, fuck it, they want to do something with a wild animal, and they're just like, well, may as well just go over bull again. And he got like just completely like he got whacked, and he did like a backflip, and he just broke a whole bunch of bones. He got brain damage from it.
God.
Pretty gnarly. So he got hurt the worst out of any Jackass film on this movie, and so did Steve-O. But it's great. I loved it. I love seeing the guys. They're just something like you like seeing them get hurt, but at the same time, there's like this really nice camaraderie between them. That's really nice and sweet. Yeah. They're like, you know, we're just a bunch of, you know, really close friends and just having a bit of fun and the new people were great. You know, they like some of them were a bit outshined the others. Some of them I thought were a bit broad their A game a lot more than the others did. But overall, really good, really fun film. Do you feel like
the new cast, are they set up to sort of replace them? Like, is it a passing the torch sort of thing, or they're just
a little bit? Well, a little bit. I think they've said, well, if we want to continue doing this, the new cast is going to be the ones that kind of take over. They don't definitely say, oh, you know, there's going to be another Jackass movie or series or whatever. But I think it's like, if that does happen in the future, then I've got a feeling that these new cars will be the ones that can primarily take over. And yeah, I'm just trying to think. There's a lot of penis and testicles.
Nice.
Like
that's like, what we're paying for. That's why I pay the big bucks. For.
But like, there's more penis and testicles in this Jackass movie than any other Jackass movie. Like almost like every few skits, someone will just have their dick out, and it'll be something to do with their dick. The skit will revolve around the dick. So,
well, you've got to give the people what they want, okay? You've got to give the people what they want.
It's basically porn by the sounds of it.
There's so many.
What sort of porn are you watching, Adrian? Holy shit. Damn.
Well, like Jesse's like, well, you know, every now and then there'll just be a guy standing there just with his penis out, you know?
Well, no, they won't just be standing there with their penis out, but there's like so much.
With balls involved? Seriously.
No. No, not with balls, but there's so much dick in this movie. Like, there was a bit of penis in like the first three Jackasses, but this one is like. Takes it to 11. And
it's the way you say it. It's like, yeah, there's a bit of penis.
It's primarily, of course, Chris Pontius. There's a couple of other guys as well. Like the first skit is Chris Pontius' penis dressed up as Godzilla. He's wrecking like a miniature town set that they've superimposed all the Jackass crew members in. So Johnny Knoxville's playing like a general who's leading like these soldiers to defeat the penis Godzilla or whatever. So
incredible. Must watch. Mm. Like I said, it's probably gonna win an Oscar.
But yeah,
if it doesn't.
Yeah. A lot of penis, and there's a lot of gross, there's a fair bit of gross stuff in here as well. I'll say one more thing. Aaron, you know Aaron, Danger Aaron, he by far gets the worst shit in this movie. Like this, the shit he does compared to the other guys, they just put him through the worst shit. And if you ever see the movie, Matt, or you know the listeners, you'll understand what I mean. Like he always just seems to get picked to do just the worst, terrible, most insane crap this movie. So,
yeah,
it was great, good movie, enjoyed it.
Last question before we move on. Do they address the Bam issue at all? Like, I know he's in it. Is he in it much?
So he is literally – there's one skit where they're all dressed up in, like, musician outfits. I can't remember what the specific name is. And they're all playing, like, you know, the saxophone or the oboe or the flute. They're all playing different instruments. And then, like, there's this treadmill near them that's going, like – 100 miles an hour, and what they're doing is walking. They're doing like a marching band kind of thing, and they're walking onto the treadmill and just getting flung into this wall. And they completely fuck themselves up. Like Steve-O broke his collarbone in it or something like that. Bam is in that skit, and it's the only skit in the movie he's in, and it's kind of almost like a blink and you'll miss it. Him,
fuck.
Like when they're walking up, he's sort of in the middle of the group, so you don't really see him, and then you see him like for like. Literally a second getting flung into the wall. And then that's it. You don't see him for the rest of the movie. So he's literally, you'll see him for like 2 seconds and that's it.
Yeah.
And you really, most people will miss him. Most people like will say that he wasn't in the movie. He was in the movie, but it's just like for 1 second. And he's credited as well. So
snap. Well, at least they credit him. Yeah. Moving on to the next. I saw Don't Breathe 2. This was all the way back in, I think it was like August last year.
Whoa.
We were going to cover this in our first episode, I believe, but we had Shang-Chi and a bunch of other big stuff. But look, I'll save you guys the trouble. Don't Breathe 1 is a freaking modern classic, in my opinion. It is an incredible film. But as I have alluded to in previous episodes, Don't Breathe 2 is whack. It is
trash.
So trash. It's unbelievable how they fucked this up on such a basic level. Just the concept.
Oh.
The concept is terrible. Like, in my opinion, because what they do is they try and turn him into an anti-hero. Like, they try and make him a good guy. And
that's so just – what the hell are they thinking?
AD and I actually talked about this previously, and funnily enough, another test episode before we launched the podcast, we did a test episode where we talked about the trailer And Adrian had a theory like, oh, well, maybe they'll take the perspective of this young girl he's taking care of and reveal he's a monster. That would be a pretty good way. And I was like, yeah, that would be a great way to do it, you know? Unfortunately, no. He's the main character. Basically, it's weird. It doesn't feel like Don't Breathe 2. It feels like Don't Breathe 3 or 4 because in between the first movie, which, reminding you, it ends with him attempting to forcibly impregnate a woman, making him possibly the most unlikable character ever.
It's been so long since I've watched it.
The ending is disgusting. I really don't like it. It makes me uncomfortable. But between the first and second one, apparently there's a house that's just burning down and this girl's inside just going to die. He comes along, I think, saves her and then raises her as his own and sort of like, and then basically these robbers or something go break into his house and he has to protect the house and protect the girl because they want the girl because I think one of them is like...
Yeah, I'm already not liking
the abusive dad or something like that. It's always about abuse with this. But anyways, it just feels weird because... And like the director's kind of like, yeah, you're not meant to like him. He's an unlikable protagonist, but he's still unlikable. And on top of that, like there's less of the whole Quiet Place stuff where everyone has to be quiet and you have to like not breathe to like so you can hide from him because he's blind and he goes up sensories. There is one amazing scene though where what do? This is what he does. It's kind of fucked up. There's a guy in like his garage and sneaks behind him and super glues his lips together. And the guy is like, he actually survives it, but he has to like pretty much rip his face off to get rid of it. And it's really fucked up. Like, that's a cool kill.
Has he never heard of hot water?
Apparently not. But yeah, I can see where they're trying to go, but I just don't think this is the character you do that with. I think it just would have been so much better if you continued it being a slasher movie and having kill. Like at moments, it does feel like the original, but they're just small moments. And it's just such a weird place to take this character. I think just in this generation now of filmmakers, studios want franchises. And these directors, I think, director and writers, I applaud them because they got balls. They're like, how do we make a franchise out of this? And most horror franchises, they just have a killer kill new people every movie and it's repetitive and stale and old. So, and usually you want to root for the guy to kill the people anyways because you're there for the kills. So I get where they might have been trying to come from and I applaud them for trying something different, but it doesn't work. You just can't have a guy pretty much try and rape someone and then in the next movie, make him the good guy. I'm sorry, just no. No thank you. Sorry, we're closed. Bye. And that's what I think about Don't Breathe 2. I don't want them to do a Don't Breathe 3 unless they return to the original form. And yeah, moving on though, we're gonna go back to, we'll go back to Adrienne for another film you saw recently, Aidy. You saw West Side Story. Oh, maybe we should save this for a normal episode. Actually, let me ask you real quick. Would you rather cover West Side Story or Night or Old or Old or Night Teeth? You can pick one of them.
Actually, Night Teeth. Night Teeth.
Okay.
I'd rather do that if I was going to save it.
Yeah, we're going to save West Side Story for a real episode, and Adrian's going to talk to us about Night Teeth, which I have no idea what is that. Is that a show or a movie?
So it's a movie. It's a Netflix original, and it's a vampire movie. I love vampire movies, all about them. And this trailer sucked me right in, pun intended. It was really, really good. The cinematography in this film, by the way, if you're all about visuals, this is a feast for the eyes. Basically, I'll give you like the rundown of what it's about. So, a college student moonlighting as a chauffeur picks up two mysterious women for a night of party hopping across LA. However, when he uncovers their bloodthirsty intentions and their dangerous, shadowy underworld, he has to fight to stay alive. He sort of gets caught up, like accidentally, in a vampire mafia ring. And it is so good. The cast, you'd know them from... I don't know, sort of random things like Debbie Ryan, who's the main vampire. She's of Disney Channel fame, but she's so ferocious and just a bad bitch in this movie. Lucy Fry is the other vampire, and she does an amazing job too. She's also Australian, actually. So Aussie's representing, really cool. But they are just, yeah, their chemistry is amazing. They're really dark vampires. It's gory. They don't hold back with the violence at all. But it's also funny. Like, it's sort of a rom-com at a couple layers down. Like, that would be a part of the story for sure, because the driver who gets caught up in it falls in love with Blair, who's one of the main vampires. So you've also got like Alfie Allen, who was in Game of Thrones in it. He plays the like head of the mafia, who's a total asshole. He's so good at playing dicks. And then yeah, Megan Fox is in it for a little bit, as is Sydney Sweeney from Euphoria. So it's a really cool cast. And the director did an amazing job. I think that the pacing was really, really good. You're on the ride the entire time. There's no moments where you're bored, not even for a second.
Dope.
Yeah.
And this also stars Alfie Allen, who is the bad guy from the first John Wick. Oh, he's also Theon Greyjoy.
But... yeah, Adrian just said that.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, sorry. He was actually, took my headphones off for 1 second, and that's what I missed.
He was actually probably my favorite on, or one of my favorites on Game of Thrones.
Yeah, me too. He really
he had such a good arc in Game of Thrones.
He did.
But then we know what happened with Game of Thrones.
We don't talk about that.
actually, let me ask you something, because we got to. Do you really think it's fair that we judge Game of Thrones by its final season? Because it gave us at least four or five of the best seasons of television ever. But all we do is talk about how bad the final season was.
We dedicated years of our lives waiting for that moment, and they stripped it from us. They took it away.
I'd even say it's like dedicating our lives. Like, I'd even say it's like you can't really watch it again now. You can't enjoy those first few seasons, because it doesn't complete the whole series. You have to watch all of it, you know, because it's complete that way. And it's like, are we actually gonna go into this? Because it's like, if they didn't want to, like, I know they didn't want to do the last, like, they were over it, they just wanted to quickly wrap up the last season and do other projects, because they had a Star Wars project dangling in front of them, and
which, like, they lost because of the failure of the final season.
And but it's like, dude, just, you know, even if you're going to end it on season 8, fair enough, but at least give it a bit more breathing room, and just the
maybe
writing.
Maybe hour and a half episodes or something. Well, just, like, fill it up.
I get it, because, like, the point when you're writing a story, like, even take a television writing, right? They don't write a script. They have a writer's room, and they'll spend at least 3 days trying to break a story. Just come up with bullet points on that.
Mm.
And then you write, you know. You got to know your ending before you can really do much of the story. The whole point of the journey to get to destination is to get to destination. So if you're setting up all these things with terrible payoff, or if you're, it does feel everything else before it redundant. And it's the shame when I feel like a show can be ruined by one episode, you know. Like, for example, For me, like, a lot of people say, well, Scrubs is, you know, the season 9 was bad. But I'm like, no, but the real finale was in season 8. So I still think Scrubs is a good show.
Did they wrap in season 8?
Sorry?
Did they wrap it in season 8? Like, did they have a finale?
So what happened was, they were meant to end in season 6, but then there was the writers. And season 7 was meant to be the final season. Season 7 of Scrubs was meant to be the final season, but then there was a writer's strike. So they had to cut it in half. And they were going, that's fine, we'll just continue it next season. But NBC at the time was like, no, we only contracted you for a season 7. You're done. So they sold the show to ABC, who were like, we'll happily give you a final season. So they make season 8, which is one of the best seasons ever of Scrubs. It feels like season 1 all over again, but with, like, all the extra stuff. And it's amazing season. Aww. Has the most incredible emotional finale ever, which is so true to the show. and it really ties in. It closes all these other plot lines and running gags and stuff. And then ABC go, we know we said we just wanted season 8, but technically we've got you all under contract. It did so well. It did way better than we expected. So now we want a season 9. And Bill Lawrence, the showrunner, was like, I just closed every storyline. We're actually knocking down the sets. We can't. They're like, we don't care. Make a season 9 somehow. So then he tried to make a spin-off show called Scrubs MD, but they're like, no, it has to be called Scrubs. So then in season 9, it's called Scrubs, and small writing says MD. Medical School, sorry. Scrubs Medical School underneath. And they try and like shit. They get the old cast in to sort of like pass the torch to a new generation, but it's not the same. And you know, it's what gave the world Dave Franco. It wasn't great. But I also look at How I Met Your Mother. I love the finale, but a lot of people hate it, and they say the show's ruined for that. But I like it. Go on.
I was just gonna say, like with Game of Thrones, it was 2011 to 2019. You've nearly, you know, like spent a decade same as Scrubs of your life, waiting, falling in love with these characters. So, you know, handle with care. Just handle with care.
That's true. What I like How I Met Your Mother is they actually filmed scenes for the last episode all the way back in season 2. So, like, they had it planned. Yeah. If you watch the final episode, like, so you know how the whole plot device is him telling the story to his kids.
That's right.
They stopped doing that in season 2. They stopped cutting back to the kids. But in the final episode, they cut back to the kids. And it's like at that point, I think they'd gone from stand definition to high definition. So like the footage even looks different. And they have like a modern day footage intercut with that. But it's really great. And it's good to know that they planned it out from the start. But look, we're off topic. And we're trying to do a short one today, so let's move on to another topic. Jesse, you saw Wrath of Man starring Jason Statham.
Everything like this.
Yes.
Very gravelly voice.
Very gravelly. It's Guy Ritchie directing, right?
Yes, it's Guy Ritchie's directing, and I saw this like months and months ago. I saw it was my dad. He's like, hey, this movie's on. And I was like, doing nothing. I was like, I've got no life. I've got no social life. Let's do it. And it was okay. I mean, with Jason Statham action movies, it's almost like you've seen one, you've seen them all. And it was good. I don't remember much about it. There was a great scene. It's about this group of I'm trying to remember what it was so long ago since I saw it.
I've got it on IMDb here. I'll read the
Have you seen it, Adi?
Yeah, I saw it in the cinema as well.
Oh, I didn't realize you both said it. Okay, great. We're having a bit of conversation. But how about I read the synopsis and then you guys can take it from there. The plot follows H, a cold and mysterious character working at a cash truck company responsible for moving hundreds of millions of dollars Los Angeles every week, each week. And if I remember correctly from the trailer, refresh my memory here, he's protecting these trucks of cash to find someone who killed somebody?
It seems
super convoluted from the trailer alone.
That's pretty spot on.
It's his son, I think, from memory. And there's this group of guys that are stealing all this cash. They steal cash from this truck at the very opening scene, which sets up the entire movie. And then they go to the police station. There's this, the one scene I do remember is they go to the police station at the very end and get into like a gunfight with the police. And they're wearing all this like riot gear. It's probably the best scene in the whole movie. That last part. The first half, I was a bit in and out. I wasn't really tuning into it much. I was a bit bored. But the final act where they're in the police station in a gunfight with the cops. That was really, really good. I will say one thing, though, which sort of annoyed me a little bit, is the fact that they were using numbers to identify themselves. And I made a film with a bunch of criminals who use numbers to identify themselves. And I was like thinking, can I sue here?
You can try, but I don't think you'll have much luck. But numbers claim available now on, was it Amazon or something?
Amazon and Ozflix. Yeah, it was all right. It was fun popcorn flick. Jason Statham was fine. He was being his Jason Statham-ness, and it was largely forgettable except for that final act. That final gunfight was really well done, and I really enjoyed that final like gunfight slash escape ending. It was really well done. But yeah, fun popcorn flick. I don't know, Adi, what did you think?
Ladies and gentlemen, when we describe a film as forgettable, this is what we're talking about, because you can tell Jesse's really struggling here.
No, but what I mean, okay, so there's two types. There's two types of forgettable. There's a forgettable where it was so bad, the whole thing was forgettable. And then there's the forgettable where it's all right to kill time on a Sunday. It's not a great movie, not a terrible movie. It's just mediocre. But it's forgettable in the sense that I probably won't remember it.
Yeah,
in a day or two's time. Hence why I'm struggling to recall now exactly what actually happened in the fucking movie. So yeah, it was just mediocre. It was just okay. That's what I meant. That's what I'm trying to express.
Yeah.
What I'm saying. Anyway, I'll shut up now. So
it's, how do you go? I reckon I agree with you for the most part. The first two acts are a lot to get through. There's lots of plot and character building. And it can feel very slow, but then in that third act, it is kind of insane, but in a really good way. So the payoff is good. If you can manage to sit, it is quite long as well from memory, but if you manage to sit through the whole thing, the ending is really good. The action's good. That's like the fighting you've been waiting for that whole 2 hours. And when it comes, it's excellent. I liked it. That was the first movie that Guy Ritchie brought Josh Hartnett in for, and he's now, I'm pretty sure, just going to be in like all of his movies in the future, which I'm really happy about. I actually wished he had a bigger role in the movie.
Because he kind of disappeared, didn't he? He disappeared.
He sort of did. He was just, I don't know, a bit of a filler character, but it was good. I do love Jason's genuine want for revenge. I feel like even if he's playing the same sort of person, he does bring that across really well, and you're always on his side and like you're rooting for him. What happened to his character is really tragic. So from the get-go, I was pretty connected and I was on his side. But yeah, it wasn't my fave Guy Ritchie one. Like you said, not bad at all. It's just a bit long. I think the trailer makes it look like it's going to be action like the whole time, but it's not.
There was a lot of action though, especially towards the second half, but yeah, it's, yeah. I was bored the first half, I'm not gonna lie. Yeah,
it can be, but a bit of a dip for the first
half. I just remembered there was a really, really weird scene where Post Malone turns up for like 2 minutes.
Oh my god, I remember that.
And I was like, what the fuck? Post Malone just turns up for literally 2 minutes and Jason Statham just shoots him. It was the weirdest It was the weirdest fucking thing.
Cool.
I'm interested to see Post Malone get more active because he was also in Spencer Confidential. Playing it's because the tattoos are so recognizable. It's that he's very limited to the roles he can play, I think. But he's also, his personality contradicts his look so much because he's such a bubbly, happy guy. But Hollywood has programmed us to think if the guy's got tattoos, he's got to be serious and really dangerous.
Yeah.
And that's, I guess that's fine, but it's funny. But I'm also happy to see that nowadays tattoos are becoming more normalized. You see cults with tattoos, more celebrities are getting tattoos. All for it. It's not just musicians, man. But look, we're doing great for time, actually. So I'm going to allow to squeeze one more in here that we weren't going to. Adrienne, would you like to talk about Old, directed by M. Night Shyamalan?
Sure.
What a twist.
With a twist. You saw it too, Matt, didn't you?
I was going to, and then I wasn't
able
to.
Going to.
Which is story of my life. It's on streaming now, though, so I would love to see it. I was actually going to the other day. Yeah.
I think this was one of his best ones for quite a while. It's not even like mind-blowing with its plot or anything, but the acting is really good. He must have, I don't know, he got amazing performances out of his cast, and the intrigue is really strong for the first half, but then I think it's, I don't know, it unravels itself in a way that you're not like, what the hell? There is, though, at the very, very end, there's an element to the twist that you don't expect, and it's not a shock value. It's more of an like a philosophical point of view where you go, okay, this happened, which was really, really fucked up, but there was sort of like a good reason behind it originally, which you don't expect. I don't want to spoil it, because if you do watch it, I think it's very thought-provoking, and I think it was an excellent commentary. You can interpret it in as many ways as you like. The way that I took it, I was like, okay, like, interesting. Like, what are humans willing to do in the name of science, right? Like, how far is too far? Like, how much is too much? And that's left open for you to see. But it actually, there are really some really sad, highly emotional parts of the film that I suppose I wasn't expecting to feel that much during, but it was good. And it's all in the one location, so you sort of feel like you've been living on the island as well for the whole movie, like with these people. I don't know. It depends how emotionally attached you get, but you sort of feel like, oh my God, I want to get off, but you're not even, you know, you're just watching the movie. But it was really good. I thought he did great with this. I genuinely don't really see any criticism about it. I remember still thinking about it a few days later, just about the message. So that for me was really, really well done.
I think it got mixed reviews, didn't it? Old.
Yeah, sure, yeah, it got very mixed reviews.
Yeah. Which is better than terrible reviews, which is also just a game.
Yeah,
but I think that's the thing about M. Night Shyamalan. A lot of his concepts, they're very like Stephen King-esque. Like, they're very out there. They're pretty bizarre. Like, what if this was a thing? And then like now that he's dug himself in a hole where we expect a big twist, and that can either make or break the film. And so sometimes it's a slam dunk. I say slam dunk while hitting a home run. Or it could be a miss. And that's the thing. But I feel like his last few films, like, he has been bouncing back. So good on him. Guys, I had a bit of inspiration right now. We're going to play a little game. I'm going to call it Bangers or Mash. It's like hot or not, but the question is it a banger? We're going to go through a bunch of M. Night Shyamalan films, and I just want to hear quickly from you guys, is it a banger or is it mash?
What if we haven't seen them?
If you haven't seen them, just say pass, okay?
Okay.
Ready?
I haven't seen many.
Or you can go off public reception to your knowledge, okay?
Okay.
So if you haven't seen it, but everyone calls it trash, you can just say mash, okay?
Mm-hmm.
All right, so I'm going to start. Let's do it. I'm not going to start from the start. I'm going to start from his big breakout hit, The Sixth Sense. Banger or mash?
Banger. Banger.
Banger. Nothing from Jesse?
Nothing?
Pass.
You can just say, okay.
Pass.
Okay. We'll do this quick. Oh man.
I haven't seen it.
You get mad at me if you're not saying Godfather? But not, okay.
That's actually very
mate,
surprising,
Jesse. You can't
Jesse.
Compare
that's
the Godfather with Sixth Sense, really.
You, okay.
Okay. Sixth Sense is a pretty big deal. It's a pretty big deal.
It made plot twists cool. It made
okay,
plot
okay,
twists
cool. Right.
Actually,
it's
did.
Not the same, but yeah. Okay, but I'll follow into that. Unbreakable, banger or mash?
Oh, I haven't seen it, so I have to see it.
I haven't seen it either. Pass.
Personally, I have not seen it either, but I know it's a banger from
everyone. I've heard it's a banger, yeah.
And also, I've weirdly seen its sequel, so I
like that. Anyways, yeah, me too, actually.
Now we get into like middling territory. Signs.
Oh, banger. Absolute banger. One of my all-time favorites. Mm-hmm.
All right. The Village.
Smash.
I haven't seen it.
Yeah,
absolute watery mash.
I think if I remember correctly, the twist is you think they're in like this olden day times, and then she like leaves the village and finds out it's modern day.
Yeah.
Been there. Okay.
That was such a waste of time.
Lady in the Water.
Haven't seen it.
I remember that being a bit mash.
It's one of his most panned films. I'm going to say mash. The Happening.
Mash.
Mash.
You know what? I'm going to say it's what's in the middle. Peas? Peas and potatoes? Peas? I don't know. I feel like I remember seeing it in the theater and I enjoyed the concept of everyone's just cool dying concept. And killing themselves. And it was a bit funny and I don't know if it was meant to be funny. It's like there's the one where like the guy has like that giant lawnmower and just lays down in front of it while
runs it right.
That's so fucking
But there's that one scene which is just so memorable. Where I think is it Mark Wahlberg? I think it is.
He's like
they figure out it's like the plants, and so he starts talking to plants like, "Hey, I don't want you to kill me." Da, 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 and touch the plastic. Like, oh no,
no.
But yeah,
I think Mark Wahlberg famously hated.
Yeah,
he does. Yeah. So it's definitely mash, but I feel like I had some moments of okayness. But I stress okayness, not goodness. Okay. The Last Airbender, MASH is...
I haven't seen it.
I haven't seen it either, MASH, but it's one of his most hated films. I know
it's
that much.
Not good.
I've seen not clips, good. And I remember finding even like the little two-minute clips on YouTube boring.
Yeah,
I was meant to go through this faster, but it's okay. After Earth, I haven't seen it, but I'm going to say MASH.
MASH, MASH, absolutely MASH. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
unfortunately, I have seen it.
I think I think Will was hoping that would be the thing that blows up Jaden Smith, but no. He at the time he was not an icon living. moving on to The Visit.
I have not. I have seen The Visit. Yeah,
I've seen
it.
No, I think it's a banger. I like The Visit. I really like the. I think it's apparently. Every cent he made from After Earth just went to fund The Visit, and he shot it with a bunch of like unknowns. Look, it's a little weird
That's
at times.
Cool.
It's not on the same level as The Sixth Sense and Signs and Unbreakable, but for a low budget film, and compared to all of his other shittier films, it is a lot better.
In fairness, I'll say it's mash but with some gravy. Okay, like there's some good parts.
Okay, I like this in the game. Split.
Banger. But I hated the ending.
I
did not like the ending at all.
It was a bit far-fetched, wasn't it? Yeah.
But it was very far-fetched. I liked the whole movie, and then the ending happened. I'm like, I'm not digging this at all. So, but I'll still say it's a banger.
Yeah. I think amazing performance by, what's his name? Is
Anya Taylor-Joy. Oh, James McAvoy.
Oh, yeah, Anya Taylor-Joy, yeah, also good. But, yeah, he earns that. Following up, the sequel, Glass, which is also a sequel to Unbreakable, Glass. Have you guys seen that?
I haven't seen it.
Like,
I know the movie, but I haven't seen it.
For me, it's, I suppose it's MASH, but... I think you could just tell that he's got like a medium budget and he's really struggling to pay the actors. Like, because Sam Jackson and Bruce Willis cost so much. And it's kind of split into three parts.
Especially Bruce Willis.
Yeah. But you know what? It's not a great film, but it was nice to see Bruce Willis try for once. Like, there's some scenes where it's like, oh, that's right. He's good at acting. I forgot, like, because he has so much shit.
Yeah.
And it's the last decent role. It's the last good performance I've seen from Bruce Willis. And now he has his own Razzie's category. So finally, Adrienne, Old, is it a banger? Or MASH?
You know what? I'm going to say it was a banger because more than like the shock value, it actually genuinely left me affected on an emotional level, and I thought it was really intelligent. So, banger.
There we go. And that's our first episode of Banger and Mash. Bangers and Mash. I came up with that concept on the spot too. It's like it's another hot one.
It's pretty good.
I like that, even though I hadn't seen like 90% of his filmography. I enjoyed that.
You might have to do that with some more directors as they come up.
Yes.
Let's move on. How are we doing for time? We're doing okay. Real quick, I'm going to talk about Home Sweet Home Alone, which we didn't cover on the podcast. You know what? I'm just going to pull it up on IMDb real quick. Home Sweet Home Alone is on Disney Plus. Came out around Christmas time last year. And it stars the cute kid from the cute supporting kid from Taika Waititi's Nazi movie called Jojo Rabbit.
Yes,
And he's adorable as fuck. And it's written by, and I was really excited for it because it was written by Mikey Day and Streeta Seidel of Saturday Night Live fame. And Streeta Seidel, I've been following since he worked at College Humor, so I was very excited.
Cool.
I love the cast. I was really excited for the cast because a comedian I really like with Pete Holmes played a character, but he was barely in the movie, so
sucks.
But the thing that makes this Home Alone, first of all, I just want to say, in my household is a Home Alone household. We've seen all of them, including the director DVD ones, and I would say this is, of all the director video ones, this is the best. It's still not as good as Home Alone 1, 2, or 3. I would say this is the fourth best Home Alone.
How many are there?
There are five?
I think this is six. This is number six.
This is six, yeah. Yes. So you're saying
this is the fourth best?
This is the fourth, four out of six, yeah. Okay, real quick, I'll rank all the Home Alone.
That doesn't sound like a great ranking.
Yeah, but like
four,
two of
four out of six.
But the two of them are considered two of the best family movies of all time, and I would say the third one is really close in quality. It's not as good as the first two, but I think it's super underrated. But I think it's really close. If I had to rank all six Home Alones, I would say it goes 2-1. Oh, I think it's 1-2. No. 2-1-3. Home Sweet Home Alone. Home Alone 5, Home Alone 4. Yeah, 4 is definitely the worst. And it's weird. And 5 is weird because they have Kellan McAllister return, but it's played by a different actor who looks nothing like Macaulay Culkin.
Yeah, that's weird.
It's a whole thing. But look, Home Sweet Home Alone. This one, they try to do something different where they try and make you – so the people breaking in is played by Ellie Kemper, who is an amazing actress. You know, you've seen her in The Office and what's the Netflix one? Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt. And then it's also Rob Delaney, who is just a really great physical actor. You know, he was in Deadpool 2 as Peter with the mustache. And, but what happens is, I think, if I remember correctly, they've left something in the house or something, and they have to break in to get it. And they've got trouble with their bills and all that. They're not like burglars, like cat burglars. And what the problem with that is, when this kid starts fucking them up, and he fucks them up, I start feeling sorry for them. So
my god, it's that intense.
Yeah, well, it's because they have good intentions. Like they actually are like, they actually sit down, they talk about the ethics of, we're going to war against a child, you know? Like, maybe we shouldn't be doing this. And it's like, yeah, you shouldn't be. But it's not like all the other five, it's like, oh, these are the bad guys. And they're actually likable. They're likable people. So when they start trying to break into this house and this kid's fucking them up, I feel like, oh, no, if they don't break in, they're going to lose their own house. So
that's an interesting take. I actually think that sounds pretty good.
Yeah, it's a nice take, and it makes sense because, well, it's hard to lead a film with a child, I guess. And I think he could have done it though. Archie Yates, his name is, he's great, and he's He was really cute, and that's what you need in one of these movies. You need a cute lead kid. They also try and tie it into the original two movies by Buzz McAllister returns as a cop, and he talks about his brother who was left home alone a few times. And
that's hilarious.
And the reason the cops never go to the house is because he tells the cops not to show up because he thinks it's his brother playing a prank on him. Because his because now that he's a cop, he always pranks saying that, yeah. And apparently McAllister also runs a security company, a home security company now.
Oh my God, I love that.
Yeah, but Macaulay Culkin isn't in the film, but it's nice that they made an attempt to give us some Easter eggs and stuff.
So they like referenced him.
Yeah, they referenced him. They have his brother. Like, the actor actually returns. He's all grown up now. I love that.
That's so cool.
I like that they tried. This does, unlike the other two, like 4 and 5, this doesn't feel like they just shitted it out. and they actually tried. Yeah. And I just want to defend again, Home Alone 3, a lot of people give it shit, but it has the same writer. It had the editor of the first two directed the third one. And a lot of the behind-the-scenes crew was the same. So like, I highly recommend, if anything, though, Home Alone 3. It's not as bad as people remember it. I highly recommend it. But Home Sweet Home Alone, like, I don't know, if you've got kids maybe, but not unless you're a hardcore fan of the franchise. And that's it for us today here at Upcoming Attractions. We've gone through quite a few of the list here, and I've had a good time. I hope you guys have a good time too. Hopefully, fingers crossed, hopefully this episode is released. And if all things go to plan, we might get our episodes out a bit more frequently, hopefully, because we have a lot of problems on the back end with our stuff. So hopefully this new system works for us. Anyways, I'm Matt. That's Adrian and Jesse. If you'd like to hear more from Upcoming Attractions, be sure to check us out on social media. Be sure to check the highlights on TikTok, the clips on YouTube, the full episodes on YouTube. Listen to us on iTunes, Spotify, wherever. Please give us an iTunes 5-star review. Really helps the show. And we love you all. Mwah, mwah, mwah. That's it for us today. Until next time, laters.
Bye, guys. See you later.
Bye.